From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on March 31st when Netflix released a new series, a fictional drama that centers on a teenager's suicide. The show is called 13 Reasons Why, and it's based on a popular book of the same name. We cannot talk about this show without some major spoilers this hour, so take that into account. And if you haven't heard of the show, 13 Reasons Why, odds are that teenagers in your family have. It has generated a huge amount of buzz with young audiences. Here's the premise. 17-year-old Hannah has died by suicide. She has left behind a series of cassette tapes, each detailing a reason that led to her decision to end her life. She's detailing events in the recent past and the people who have hurt her. The show includes many flashbacks, along with Hannah's voice narrating the tapes. Her classmates are left to listen to the tapes in an effort to connect certain actions and events and figure out what happened that led up to the suicide. And the show spares nothing with the suicide itself. It is remarkably graphic. Here's how much publicity the show has earned. The Monroe County Office of Mental Health sent an email to school districts along with a number of local agencies that contains a list of talking points that come from a couple of different organizations, SAVE and the Jed Foundation, that kind of detail what health professionals think about the show. And those points include a concern that the show glorifies suicide, that it creates a fictional ideal where you can gain justice after your own death and then narrate your own story. There are concerns about how a school guidance counselor failed to help Hannah, and the show presents no viable alternatives. But the show does have a legion of fans who say it's brought more awareness to bullying, sexual assault, and isolation. And a lot of critics, not mental health professionals, but critics like it. So there's a kind of a split about 13 Reasons Why. And we want to talk about that this hour just because of all the buzz the show is getting. So we reached out to Christina Mosgraber, who is an events coordinator and the walk manager at NAMI Rochester, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's always good to have you back. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Jenny Argentieri is here. She's a parent and a mental health advocate, I think is a fair term, though she is quick to say doesn't consider herself an expert, but has a lot to say on the subject. And Jenny, it's great to have you here. You've got three children yourself, yes?
Yes, I do. Thanks, Evan. It's good to be here. I have a 20-year-old son and two daughters, one 17, heading off to college, and my youngest is 13 in middle school.
I want to be careful just because, you know, Jenny comes from a school community locally that has seen a number of suicides in just the last year, year and a half. I mean, something like half a dozen. I don't even want to name the district because I am always worried about contagion, copycat issues, those kinds of things. But can you just speak broadly, Jenny, you know, how difficult it's been being in that community?
Well, and I think to your point, I'm not here to talk about
sure.
any particular family yep. or even necessarily my community. But I do know that I've been involved recently, actually, with my own kids' research efforts around teen suicide, having that be a continual leading cause for death among this young age group. And, you know, just in the exposure that I've had to kids at different times, including my own, I've always felt that when it comes to mental health as a topic or an issue around the dinner table, it's something that I personally have always struggled to have. I think I've grown up with probably a similar stigma that many other people around me experience as well. It's not as easy to have a conversation around your mental health as it is around, you know, your weight, your cholesterol, your blood pressure, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm hoping that more exposure and even with the pros and cons of the series will get people talking a little bit more about it.
Well, the show's called 13 Reasons Why, and Christina, from your community, when were you aware that it was coming? Because the book, my understanding is the book's like 10 years old, so
right.
you probably were aware of the book, but Netflix wanted to create the show. Selena Gomez, a popular entertainer, is one of the executive producers. When did you know it was coming?
So I actually found out it was coming. My sister told me that it was going to be on Netflix. And as soon as I saw that it was coming, I made sure that working with kids, I want to be sure to be as informed as possible.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so I made a point of being sure to also binge watch it. So I knew what was coming and I knew what the conversation was going to be about it. The book is 10 years old. I have learned, too, that there were alternate endings for the book. And so that's become a topic of conversation, too, is if the book had ended differently. And how we could talk more about prevention efforts and, you know, like you mentioned, the guidance counselor, you know, talk about programs that are in place in schools and locally and other collaborative agencies that can help kids because there's so much in place.
Well, let's be blunt. We're going to work through some of the details of the show because, again, listeners, if you haven't seen 13 Reasons Why, there are undoubtedly young adults and teenagers in your social sphere, your family, who are aware of it, maybe watching it. That's why schools were sent this information on how to sort of deal with it. And from what I have seen, the suicide prevention community is pretty unhappy with the show for a number of reasons. For you, what's the broad view? Is the series a mistake?
I don't think I'd go so far as to say the series is a mistake. I know my story, Evan, and, being an attempt survivor myself, yeah. I obviously have a different personal look at it. I've read a lot of things in the suicide prevention community, the mental health community, also a lot of peers that I connect with. And I have seen a lot of different views, but I think that anything that gets us talking about mental health and suicide prevention is important. My concern is that people don't know how to start that conversation or don't know how to reach out for help. So I want to be sure that as, you know, these conversations continue about this series, especially, that the resources are pushed. That's something I would have loved to have seen Netflix do more of, is say, you know, if you are struggling, here's the suicide prevention hotline. Here's some resources you can reach out to. Because, of course, you know, we know there were a lot of times along the way where, you know, she could have gotten more help. I think she may have not known how to get help. I can tell you, when I was a teenager, I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know where to go for that. Jenny mentioned the stigma, you know, and stigma is a huge issue, especially with young people and trying to figure out where to get help. So I definitely wouldn't go so far as to say it's a mistake, but I definitely think there's a lot of things that could have been handled a little more sensitively, done differently. And just be sure that as we go forward talking about this, we talk about resources in place to not have such a tragic ending.
I'm looking at some of the praise, and I'll ask Jenny if she feels there is something, anything good that kind of came from the series. Caitlin Riley, writing for Refinery29 Online, says, quote, "This show has moved me in a way few others have. It's call to action. Hannah's story may be over, but for the sake of its audience, I hope 13 Reasons Why is not." And just on that point, I think there's going to be a second season. Selena Gomez, the executive producer, defended the series in a 30-minute featurette called Beyond the Reasons, which is also available on Netflix. And she said, quote, "We wanted to do this in a way where it was honest, and we wanted to make something that can hopefully help people, because suicide should never, ever be an option," end quote. That's Selena Gomez. Okay, as a parent, you know, are you buying what you're hearing from Selena Gomez, from some of the critical praise that you're hearing out there?
You know what? I think that when I watched the series, it just reminded me, even when I went through high school and middle school, there are so many moments when, as you're growing, you're going through hormonal changes, you're wanting to fit in. That is such the driving force, I think, for young kids. And then you add on top of that all the pressures from the external world. How many AP classes am I taking? I need to know sooner than later what I'm going to be doing when I leave high school. The expectation is that I'm going to go to a four-year college. I need to do this. I need to do that. There's a lot of things that pile up on these kids today. And one thing that I think I liked about the series was that it touched upon the fact that there are so many people with their own story and their own internal, if you will, turmoil or suffering, even, you know, at any particular age. And I think it's this idea that you can feel very lonely in that. And I feel like that was a movie that kind of didn't point to any one particular person for the blame, but how could we all play a part in trying to be a little more empathetic, mm-hmm. try and be a little more not just self-aware, but aware of what other people on any given day might be going through, and what can you do?
If you read a lot of the praise that comes in social media, you hear a lot of people saying, you know, this series made me think about people that I'll see in the hallway. Can I reach out to them? Can I ask them how their day's going? That's one thing, but it's another to use a plot point that essentially does blame other people. It's sort of this unfolding plot on who gets the most blame, and, you know, Clay is this central character, and he's wondering, am I going to be to blame? And in a moment, I'm going to ask Christina to kind of address that, because my understanding, and I'm certainly not an expert, is that, you know, when suicide happens, you don't cast about looking to blame other people. That's not necessarily a productive way to do it. And this series of tapes kind of does that. Every tape is kind of its own drama of what happened here, and some fairly heavy stuff: sexual assault, bullying, those kinds of things, personal betrayal. But that blame is tough. And I want to listen to a clip from the show. This is Clay. Again, he is one of the main characters in the show. And he is giving a tour of the school to a group of foreign exchange students. He shows them Hannah's locker. And again, this is after her death. And has a moment where he kind of starts blaming everyone for her suicide. So let's listen to this clip from the show.
Look at these lockers. They all look alike, right? Not this one. This one is special. Belonged to a girl who killed herself.
Clay, come on.
You see all these don't kill yourself posters up on the wall? They weren't up before. They put them up because she killed herself. And why did she do it? Because the kids here treated her like
Jensen, that's enough.
But no one wants to admit it, so they paint over the bathrooms and put up a memorial because that's the kind of school that this is. Everyone is just so nice until they drive you to kill yourself. And sooner or later, the truth will come out.
You're saying the truth will come out, and he's angry. I mean, there's nothing wrong, I think, with depicting an emotional friend's reaction to the loss of a friend. But again, this is a central theme that continues to play out in the show. And so, Christina, is blame too strong a theme in this show?
I do. I personally think that blame is too strong of a theme in this show. I think after any traumatic loss, you know, suicide especially, people are searching for reasons. And not to sound cliche with the title of the show, but people are looking for the why. You know, why did this happen? How did we not see this? You know, and I think that by placing just so much blame on, you know, placing the blame on other people, I think that that theme is just too strong. I really do. One thing I've talked about with some peers of mine is that there wasn't enough focus on, you know, the mental health piece and again those resources and things like that and other contributing factors. They did show the heavy issues like we talked about, sexual assault and betrayal and things like that, but again, to see some more support for her in that. And I think that that for me is a big part of my concern with the show again, is that, you know, person after person after person failed her, but to blame that as the cause of it, just I feel is a little bit strong.
Okay, so. The sense that I got was all these failures to her happen, and she was viewing it as, you know, there's two options. There's suicide and not suicide, as
right.
opposed to reaching out for
right.
professional help and all of those kind of more actual, real good mental health counseling.
Right.
Jenny, how did you feel about blame as a theme?
You know what? I have to agree with Christina, and I would have loved to have seen, or if they were to take the movie and almost give it a different approach and say, instead of the blame piece, what if? Mm-hmm. What if all these various different opportunities, the outcome could have been different based on different interactions happening. So, you know, when I first heard about the movie, someone was telling it to me at work. And I was saying, you know, I think that, you know, that person has to accept responsibility, too, for the decisions that they're making. What I get nervous so much, especially in this age group, is that I'd love there to be some intervention before someone at that age, before their life has really even begun, and for them to understand the value and the meaning that they hold in this world, that they're doing something, you know, very, very short-sighted in many ways, thinking that this is going to solve it all before they've given life enough of a chance. So I would like to see that kind of messaging come out more so than it did.
One thing, too, I want to touch on from playing that scene, I found that scene very emotional. Even just listening to it again, I can feel it in my chest. And it's because it resonates that the after, you know, effect. It resonates that we didn't do anything proactive about it, but now that it's happened, we're taking action. And I think a lot of people do share that feeling. Again, back to that blame, you know, people are wondering, why didn't we do more? Why didn't the community do more? And I can tell you that locally, we are, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, we are in a lot of school districts, and we are working with the schools with our Ending the Silence program, which we do with middle and high school students. There are lots of amazing counselors out there that are helping these kids. And I can tell you from when I was growing up versus now, the change in the mental health conversation is incredible. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, us going into the schools has been triggered by a tragic event. But again, I just, you know, hope we can keep that focus on the fact there are these programs available at no cost in the community.
Where would you send someone right away to get help?
To send someone to get help, I would send them to us at NAMI, because if we don't have we will help you find it. That's one important thing to know. So you could call us if you are looking for the programs, if you're looking for a doctor, or you're looking for access to services. You know, we have an enormous resource library where we can send people. If it's an emergency, though, the Suicide Prevention Hotline or Lifeline, of course, but...
You mentioned counselors, and I just want to hit this point as we continue talking about the new Netflix series, 13 Reasons Why, that is about a teen suicide. And you're going to hear spoilers this hour. We're talking about what happens in the show because a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of kids are talking about it. A lot of teenagers, a lot of young adults are talking about it. I see the phone ringing. I know a lot of people want to talk about it this hour, and we'll get to your calls coming up here. But it's important to point out, I think, to stress and to expand upon what Christina just said, which is, man, there are some really great counselors out there. And one of the concerns I have with this show is one of the last people on sort of the blame, you know, sort of the series of who does Hannah blame for her suicide is a counselor at school. She secretly records a conversation. The counselor, as far as I can understand it, sort of breaks a ton of guidelines and rules on how you'd really want to talk to somebody. Borderline blames Hannah for enduring sexual assault or kind of turns it around on her. Just does not make her at all feel validated, welcome, open, and it's a disaster. Here's the problem I have with that. It's a fictional show, but that's the only counselor we see. And think of the millions of kids who are going to see this show. And I'm not saying kids are not capable of understanding emotions and understanding fiction, but when you're wrapped up in a show and you're invested in it emotionally, my concern is they come out of the show saying, yeah, I'm not going to a counselor. Look what they did to Hannah. That's what happens, as opposed to going, wow, well, that was one bad case, but wow, there's some mental health professionals doing amazing work. And that scares me. What do you think, Christina?
I agree completely. And I know we were chatting before the show about, I think about the kid watching this alone. I think about, or even the adult or the attempt survivor or the person living with an illness that is struggling. And I think about them watching it. And just like you said, I find myself getting so pulled into it. And I couldn't stop watching it. And I wanted to, and I wanted to learn and know how to talk about it, but it concerns me that for people who again are struggling and then don't know the resources that are available to get so caught up in it, I could see where that could take them right to that place where you said, oh wow, that's what happened to Hannah and that's what's going to happen to me. That's exactly what we're trying to avoid and we don't want to happen, especially with our teenagers.
Jenny, what do you think?
I have to agree with Christina on this, and I will just make a plug for her organization because when I read over some of Christina's, even just her handouts and her materials that she has shared with me, it really does, even from a parent perspective, there's concrete dialogue and scripting that she gives you or that the organization provides that really helps you just start to have the conversation, because those words don't flow easily across the dinner table, I can tell you that. And as far as the movie's concerned, I completely also feel it was an unfair, I felt badly for how they portrayed that role of the counselor. And when I ask my kids, even in the two that have been through high school or in high school now, I think there's a lot on counselors' plates, and they're trying, their goal is to really help cultivate, the academic growth of many, many students. And then to compound that with now also trying to be that kind of counselor who's somebody that also is supposed to be available and ready and be able to be empathetic and pull in those skills of what, Christina points out to. I just think it's unfair. And I definitely agree that I wouldn't want to see that movie create that message for kids saying, the last person I'm going to go to is my counselor.
Christina?
I just, these thoughts just keep sparking things within me. And one thing that, especially when I'm working with the kids, that I am sure to reiterate to them is that you may go to one person and they might not know who to call or where to go. And if you know something is wrong and you're struggling, and we talk about that gut instinct, and if you feel it and you know it, you may go to two and three and four people. And I can tell you, I learned that through my lived experience. I was turned away by an attending physician after my first attempt, very serious attempt. So, and I thought it was my fault. I blamed myself. I felt it was my fault. And so I've learned through all this work I've been doing that, you may have to go to one, two, three, four people, but someone will say, hey, I know this number we can call, or I know this counselor or agency. It can be very difficult, but just, a message in that is it might not be the first person, and it might not be the person you think is going to have all the answers. You may just be talking to someone, a friend of a friend, and they're like, hey, I know about that. Let me help you, get help.
The defense some of the critics have, and again, the critics who are praising the show 13 Reasons Why on Netflix about a teen suicide are largely doing it from the perspective that it's raw, it's real, it doesn't spare things. So whether it's the counselor or other characters, they have defended it by saying, well, that's raw, that's real life. I would just counter that by saying, you know, when you hear Jenny say, NAMI Rochester gives you actual materials, conversation starters, concrete dialogue. This is not some pie in the sky. We don't know how to talk to kids, you know, those awkward conversations that go nowhere. This is also raw, real stuff. It comes from people like Christina who have been there and are formulating these kinds of materials to help people. So I don't really just buy this idea that, well, you know, look, the show is raw and real. And, you know, it doesn't always work that way where you sit down and have that conversation. It can. It actually can. And I just want to just say I agree with Jenny. I mean, what NAMI and what they do is also raw and real, but it can be effective.
That's right.
I do want to grab a phone call from Desiree in Rochester. First up. Go ahead, Desiree.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Good.
I've actually been on your show. I've called a couple of times. I think it's absolutely ridiculous to, you're talking about bullying, and I think it's ridiculous to take blame away. Like, people need to understand that that their actions have consequences, and people need to take accountability. Bullies should feel guilty. They should feel responsible and like they played a part. Bullying is ostracizing, and being a human being is about connection. And if you don't feel as if you can connect to another human being, it's easy to withdraw. I think it's dangerous to take blame away. And another really strong example, and I'm sorry if you guys talked about something like this, my cousin killed himself, and after he was dead, his father came forward and admitted that he was bipolar. And that would have been valuable information when my cousin was in, you know, trying to get a biomedical diagnosis for his mental health issues, and he maybe would have been on the proper medicine at the time. Like, these are, you know, his father did actually play a part, you know, and it's accountability. I don't mean to repeat myself.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And I want to, first of all, say I'm so sorry to hear about your family story. And I appreciate you being willing to share it. I also appreciate the point you're making about bullying. Bullying is a very strong term and a very big problem. And I wouldn't want anyone to leave this program or any program with the idea that there shouldn't be accountability. But Desiree, thanks for the phone call. Christina, I think Desiree makes a valid point, but there's also probably some middle ground here by saying, you know, no accountability for bullies versus, you know, sort of full blame, et cetera. How do you view that?
I think in relation to the show, I very much appreciate the call, too. And I certainly, again, I agree with you. I wouldn't want anyone to think that we condone bullying or we don't
Sure.
think that bullying plays a part. I think that as it relates to the show, though, every single instance was such an extreme instance, and the betrayal was so significant, which it very much can be, and it's so painful and causes isolation. But like you said, I think there's a middle ground somewhere. I think that sometimes, again, that one connection, you know, can make all the difference. But I think it's such a tough subject. And again, the show, there's just such extreme situations in the show. And I think if there had been, again, and I know I keep going back to this, but some earlier intervention or some, you know, some way to talk about it, to reach out, you know.
Sure. And Desiree, I would just add, you know, there's probably varying degrees of, you know, deservedness for people to feel some accountability.
Right.
I mean, if someone has really bullied someone aggressively for a long time, or sexually assaulted someone, or abused someone, yeah, I understand the point you're making there. I can also tell you there's a character named Clay in the show we've been talking about. He spends so much of the series going, you know, when's the tape about me going to be? And did I kill Hannah? He actually asked the character that. Did I kill Hannah? And the character says to him, yes, you did. And then the tape sort of absolves him a little, mm-hmm. but not fully. And one of the characters eventually says, well, look, we all killed Hannah. And I'm going, is that fair to Clay, who actually loved Hannah?
He loved her.
You know, and I don't think that's fair. So that's what I think we mean by an overemphasis on blame, that the show almost makes just this whodunit unfolding plot, but it doesn't really spare anybody, even the people who loved her and in various ways did try. And I think there's a danger there. So, but still a very fair point. I mean, you know, Jenny's kids are older than my son, but I'm very aware of what bullying can look like. And you think about that, I'm sure, as a parent all the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think in the series, I think what they are trying to touch upon, but you're right, it comes off a little bit extreme, is this idea that, you know what, even by not taking action or maybe not having the courage to stand up and say, hey, cut that out, you know, or, you know, that's not cool. You know, don't do that. You know, I think sometimes we, especially during that age group, I think it's easy to lose your voice and lose that courage to speak up. And, you know, bullying isn't always quite so obvious. I find what's really hard is maneuvering through the more subtle types of bullying that happens in the form of, well, we're not going to have her sit at our lunch table today. Or the friend comes up and hands out, you know, a treat to all kinds of friends, but excludes one or two people. You know, it's sometimes, you know, there's all kinds of different forms that I think our kids see every day. And to Christina's point, it would have been great to have maybe, and this could be the teacher in me, because originally I did teach young kids, and it would have been nice to be able to pause maybe after each episode and use that as sort of a discussion. What could various people do, the main character included? What could she have done to kind of help? What would be those resources, and how do you work on resilience and trying to not let those things just pull you down?
Well, if you're just joining us, in our second half hour, we're going to talk more about the concern about contagion or the copycat syndrome and the fact that this show decided to show the suicide. And I mean in very graphic terms, which has been very controversial. I have some other pieces of writing from parents that I'd like to read. If you want to weigh in on and call the program, you can. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester. 263-9994. We're talking about the show 13 Reasons Why, a Netflix drama that just launched a few weeks ago. It's about a teen suicide, and it's fiction, but it has a lot of buzz, especially in younger audiences. And the Suicide Awareness Voices of Education, along with the Jed Foundation, sent out some talking points to local school districts. Well, I should say the Monroe County Office on Mental Health used their talking points and sent them to local school districts, local agencies, just saying, be aware. The show's out there. There's probably going to be a lot of talk about it. There's certain things you should know about it. We're touching on some of those points, and we'll hit them a little more specifically as well in our second half hour. So let's get our only break and come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, what is the role of art in turbulent times? I'm not saying that right now is the most turbulent time in our lifetimes. Maybe you think it actually might be. But regardless, what is the role of art in communicating about difficulties in society, social change and progress, and so much more when it comes to politics and beyond? We're going to talk about that from the perspective of the artists next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Christina Mosgraber is events coordinator and a walk manager at NAMI Rochester, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They do remarkable work in this community, and she has had a chance to see the entire Netflix series, 13 Reasons Why, about a teen suicide, and so has Jenny Argentieri, who is a parent and a mental health advocate, but someone who is, just says, you know, she's here in her capacity as a parent talking about her experience with her kids, what she's experienced, and why these issues are so important right now. I want to talk a little bit about the copycat effect and the concern of glamorization or romanticization. The Jed Foundation and SAVE sent these talking points out, and the Monroe County Office on Mental Health sent these to local school districts. One of the points is, suicide is never a heroic or romantic act. Hannah's suicide, although fictional, is a cautionary tale not meant to appear heroic and should be viewed as a tragedy. So you've got one of the directors of SAVE, the Suicide Awareness Voices of Education. He said that, this is Dan Rydenberg, he says, the fact that Hannah gets to tell her story after her death through the audio tapes glamorizes the death and sends a potentially dangerous message to viewers. He says, young people are not that great at separating fiction from reality, and that gets even harder to do when you're struggling with your thoughts. That's according to Rydenberg. So he's concerned that there is a glamorization, that the way the show unfolds, she left these tapes behind. They're telling you this in these dramatic fashions, that it's glamorization, that it's romanticization. Separate that from actually showing the suicide, which we're going to talk about next. But the show itself, does it glamorize? Jenny, I'll start with you.
It's a hard question to give a firm yes or no. I think in some ways you can argue that yes, it does. It was, let's just put it this way. Personally, I had a really hard time watching that scene. If I had to go back through and watch the series again, I would probably, if I was being honest, skip over that episode because it was really just painful. What I would have preferred to have seen more was, and I think it played out a little bit in those, in the different cassettes and the recollections, but you know, what happens to all the people left with the pieces and the questions and the, oh my gosh, where did I go wrong? What did I do? All the automatic, I think, blame that immediately falls on, you know, first and foremost her parents. But then it goes into all, you know, the other episodes and everybody else who she encountered too. So I do worry about the copycatting. I know that, I can commend my school community because I know that, you know, if an instance like this happened, I know that I've heard that way back in the past, you know, kids used to very much in the series, the kids were able to almost make a little bit of a memorial for her. And you saw that in the episodes. And I think there was a time, at least I had heard from prior parents who have gone through the school that the school used to do that. Now they don't because they don't want there to be a chance that someone else is seeing this as, not to be disrespectful of this individual and the pain and the loss, but to hopefully not make it seem glorified and that now look, we're just showering all this attention now on this.
Yeah. And so on that subject, this idea that, you know, Rydenberg is saying, Christina, that, you know, the show gives this idea that you may die, but you get to narrate, you know, these events after your death. And on that subject, here's a parent named Ijoma Aluo writing for The Establishment Online. She's the parent of a boy who has struggled with mental health and suicidal ideation, and she writes the following, quote, "The justice in this show is the suicide of a teenage girl. The justice is her suicide letter, recorded over 13 tapes. The show ends with Hannah saying that nobody tried hard enough, nobody cared enough to stop her, and now everybody knows it because she left behind these tapes. And now they are all sorry. It was suicide as a successful revenge, and because my teen had already survived a past suicide attempt a few years earlier, it was the absolute worst message for him to receive," end quote.
I hadn't read that yet, and I think that's very powerful. And one thing that just, as you were reading that, grabbed me was the concept of suicide as revenge. I think that is absolutely, if that's a message that somebody is getting, that is absolutely inappropriate and not accurate. You know, suicide is a way out of pain. When somebody gets to that point, whether it's over a long period of time or it happens quickly, because of a triggering event, it's always a tragedy. And I can say that, you know, using it as revenge is certainly that I find that very offensive and painful to hear. And I hope that people don't walk away with that. And again, you know, back to that concern that we've talked about is that the way it's portrayed is that suicide is the only option. Having been in a place where I was at a place where I thought suicide was my only option. And again, that was because of an untreated mental illness. I know what that feels like to think it's the only option, but I certainly don't want young people especially to know or to think that suicide is the only option out there.
The scene of the actual suicide, there were a lot of questions on, are they going to show it? Are they not? They not only show it, but they show it with one single camera angle shot in a bathtub straight on. And I'm not going to get overly detailed other to tell you, it is graphic. I couldn't watch it. I will admit that. And I couldn't believe it, to be honest with you. Christina, there's a lot of differences of opinion. Maybe, to be fair, I should at least read what the creators of the show have said about why they decided to do it. So, first of all, one of the directors said the following, quote, "We worked very hard not to be gratuitous, but we did want it to be painful to watch because we wanted it to be very clear that there is nothing in any way worthwhile about suicide." And then the author of the novel on which the Netflix series is based, Jay Asher, said that he felt compelled to defend what the show did with the suicide. He said, quote, "They felt for a TV series, if you're going to watch it, you want to show it as horrific as it actually is. So the way she does it, you can't watch it and feel like it's glamorized in any way. It looks and is painful. And then when she's found by her parents, it absolutely destroys them," end quote. Okay, so that's their defense for it. Are you buying it? Is there a reason to show it?
I personally don't think there was a reason to show it. I think anyone who went into watching the series knows how the series ends. We know that it ends with her taking her own life. again, I found it it could be very triggering for people. It could be very, and it is very painful. It was very painful for me to watch, but I think that showing it, I personally think showing it was a bit over the top. And I realize that's what they were going for. I do realize it's fiction. I understand that. And that, they're going for that real big, that punch at the end to really drive home their point. But I think that definitely could have been done without showing that. I think that it was what the message they were conveying or trying to convey definitely was effectively there without showing such a graphic, tragic scene.
Okay. Jenny?
I remember my daughter asking after I'd seen it, she was asking my husband and me if she's like, oh, I was going to watch it. And he said, you've experienced loss in your, not only in our own family, but, via suicide. And, it's not something that you have to see because you've lived basically what gets portrayed in this. So I think the question, and I agree with Christina's point, could the same learning takeaways and messages for what we can do with the information that is given in this series, can that be accomplished without having to show that very, very gruesome scene?
Here are some differing points of view we're seeing on Twitter. Mark says, I'm glad you guys are talking about this. I couldn't watch the actual suicide scene because it hit too close to home for me. But here are a couple of people defending it. Seth says, I was surprised at the suicide scene, but the author of the book and the screenwriters agreed that it was all or nothing. And had you gone without that final awful episode and suicide scene, there's a lot better case that the series itself would have glorified suicide. And then Adam writes to us and says, I can definitely see both sides of this debate. The suicide scene is horrifying, among the most upsetting things I've seen on screen. But for me, that went a long way in counteracting any sense of glorification. I'd say the dialogue it sparked has made the show worthwhile. Can that scene, Christina, because it's so raw, I mean, there's no question, and for the critics to say it's raw and real, at least that scene is raw, I guess probably as real as you can get. But does that take away glorification, or does research, or at least the concern of experts, say anytime you show it at all, the concern of copycat is real, contagion's real?
For sure. Anytime you see something like that, and we're always concerned about copycatting. And again, I go back to the point I think I made earlier, too, about someone watching it alone, especially a young person watching it alone. It is the most isolating feeling to feel that way and to find yourself in that place. But watching it, and especially because it's at the end, and if they're so engrossed in it and they've reached that point where they think there is no hope or there's no one to go to, by them seeing that, that could just be the final point, I guess, that takes them to that place where they're like, this is, how she was failed. This is how her life ends. And this is how I could complete this act. I will say that it doesn't always happen that quickly. It doesn't quite happen like that necessarily, and I think that the way it happened was so graphic and just so painful to watch. And something I found so painful too was the way her parents found her. I just, that was heartbreaking and devastating. Mm. and them not knowing what to do. And unfortunately we know that's what happens, but I just found that all to be just a little bit overwhelming and a little bit too much.
I want to read one more listener comment and then I'll get back to your phone calls. One of our listeners on Twitter says, the let's not talk about suicide because it might make people commit suicide theory seems problematic. No one said that this hour.
Correct.
And I want to make it totally clear here. I think it's a conversation about whether the show is productive or not, or whether the show has real possible contagion issues, copycat issues, and if it's going to do more harm than good. But Christina, you've said so many times, if you're concerned about somebody, you must talk about it.
That's right. And that's exactly, we tell the kids and we all, we know this in the community. If someone is talking to you about struggling and suicide, taking their life or harming someone else, the idea is already in their head. So by talking to them about it is hopefully going to get them the help that they need and open up that door for that conversation. The concerns come in where those conversations or those dramatizations aren't handled appropriately, where things that could be triggering don't have that proper follow-up in that conversation. I'm the first person to advocate for these honest conversations about suicide and moreover suicide prevention and how we help people get help before we get to that point.
Okay, Jenny, it's not a fun conversation for any parent to think about, but I just want to stress that point again. No one is saying don't talk about it because, you know, it's hard to talk about, or you're scared someone's going to commit. No way.
Absolutely. No. I in fact, you know, one thing I can share just even personally from my own home, when we've experienced, you know, loss of a very close family member, or whether, a young friend, someone that we've grown up with and known for a while, has, you know, we've learned that they've taken their life, and, you know, we sit there and we're shocked. But one thing I can say that has come out, not that there's anything good about any of that tragedy, but it has made us as a family talk more, communicate more, and be speaking more about prevention and these issues and what you face in life, and it leads just to more and more conversations. I mean, I consider us to try and be all over our kids. We nag them, we're nosy, we're in their business, and it's hard to do. You know, sometimes you run out of energy. But you know, unless you're doing that, you know, I feel like it's the best way that we can at least help support them. And these events, as sad and awful as they've been, has actually opened up the lines of communication for us.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls and listener comments. And this is Steve in Gates next on the phone. Go ahead, Steve.
Evan, I just wanted to ask the panel what they think. I know we want the best for our kids, and sometimes we're told by experts that, you know, our kids need help, medical, prescribed psychiatric help to get through, you know, some of their difficulties with trying to fit in, or attention deficit, or some other issues. But I know in the past it's a delicate balance act, If they could talk a little bit about the roles drugs might play in this, and how a parent needs, you know, what resources are there for them to navigate through, you know, what is best for their child, or what they're being told is best for their child.
Thank you, Steve. Christina, you know, that's a hard one, I know, but what do you think?
That is a hard one, you know, and because everybody... everybody is different. You know, every single person is different, and the way symptoms present, or the way that you know it's handled, everybody is different. And you know, I'm certainly gonna ask Jenny to speak to. I'm not a parent, so I'm gonna ask Jenny, of course, to speak to the parent aspect of it. But one thing that, you know, I know I talked about going to multiple people. One way to think about it, because mental illness and mental health conditions, they are medical illnesses. So if you went to a, you know, physician for another medical illness, and you didn't agree with the opinion, or you knew you needed more, you'd seek a second opinion or a third opinion. So mental illness and mental health is exactly like that. You know, if you go to someone, I can tell you the first person I went to told me I'd be an interesting case study. I never went back. So, you know, you may have to seek out multiple opinions. And also, you know, the family and the support, the more you can rally, you know, rally your troops, if you will, around you in your community, the better outcomes are going to be as well.
Okay. Jenny, as a parent, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that, and it is a tricky thing. One thing I will say is, no matter what, you know, as a parent, I feel your most important role is that you are your child's advocate, no matter what age they are, no matter what they're going through, and no one knows them better than you. With that said, you know, one of the benefits I have, at least in terms of some of the medications that they provide today to kids, whether it's around attention deficit or anxiety or depression or other types of conditions, I've had the experience of understanding in my past career. I've been in pharmaceutical sales, and it just so happened that a lot of the medications that I needed to learn were how a lot of those mental health medications work. And it is very, very scary to think, oh my gosh, they want me to put my kid on all this, you know, regimen. What's it going to do to them? And there's a lot that goes into that. I remember when one of my, you know, my daughter came to me, and I remember how awful it felt inside when she said, Mom, I need some help. I cannot keep attention. I want to try this medicine. And it was harder for me to get around that mentally myself, around the idea. But you know, I think as a parent also understanding even just the basics that, you know what, just like your, you know, your, when you take that Lipitor, when you take that medicine that really works chemically within your body to help reduce, you know, cholesterol, you know, manage sugar, it's the same thing. I think I'm hoping that there could be a little better education given to parents who are being told by the experts, hey, this is what I recommend, but do a little bit more educating and explaining on, you know what, we're not adding some more drugs to your kid's system, you know, and there's always going to be the pros and cons, but helping you navigate to try and make the best decision possible as that parent.
I got to try to hurry through a couple more listener comments. Dave in Rochester next. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi. I was just commenting. It's pretty interesting. It's an interesting topic. My wife actually passed away. This may be 2 years. She committed suicide. We weren't teenagers. We're both in our 20s at the time. And I just find it interesting about this topic because my wife, even though she was going through some depression issues, she actually avoided these types of shows. And had I looked back and, you know, had she watched these shows, she hated anything with suicide or anything depressing whatsoever. And then she ended up taking her life. But these sort of things, I would say that if you see a sign in a loved one where they are watching these shows and they are taking some of these themes more seriously than you'd like to, that's a beautiful thing, because at least you have the opportunity to talk to them and figure out. When she committed suicide, everyone was very surprised. We knew that she was depressed, but even her therapist was completely shocked. There was no signs like this. So I would say if anyone's listening and they're worried about this sort of thing, that it'd be more of a blessing if you at least have the opportunity to address it with a child or a loved one.
Dave, I'm so sorry for your loss. Thank you for the phone call. And certainly if this opens doors to more conversation, you know, we can debate whether certain things should have been shown in certain ways or certain plot points, but I think it's a pretty good point, don't you, Christina?
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, again, I'm also so sorry for your loss. And one thing that, you know, you sort of alluded to that also is important for kids and for adults is to know the warning signs. You know, if you see these things, ask your loved one, ask the question, and educate yourself on the warning signs. Because, again, you know, and I draw on my personal experience because that's what I know best. When I was struggling, I didn't know warning signs were warning signs. It caused me to isolate more and to, you know, fall deeper into where I was. So, you know, again, we want this program and other things like this to start that conversation and help people get help. That's our ultimate goal.
We have a comment from a school administrator who just says he's concerned about copycatting, certainly, but he also wants to make inroads with kids who are watching this show just because it's the thing to watch. So he hopes it can lead to some rich conversations and less stigma. And he says, how can educators manage conversations with students that may start out of pop culture, a show on Netflix, but lead to something actually productive, as opposed to saying, boy, there's a lot that I don't like here. He's saying, like, if kids are watching this, we've got to be able to talk about it, whether we like certain aspects or not. I'll start with the parent in the room. Jenny, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I told you, I feel for the educators and the counselors. They've got a full plate already. When I asked my daughter, you know, about the topic of, you know, do you find if you knew somebody at school that you had seen or suspect there's a warning sign there, what do you do? What do they tell you to do at school? And she said, well, they'll say, go to your counselor, go to a teacher, go to an adult you trust. Okay, so far so good. And I said, so what really happens? And she said, well, you might do that, but then you hear nothing else or nothing seems to change. And I said, well, do kids feel like that's, you know, this is naturally what happens? She said, not really. She said, I think for the most part, kids just want somebody who feels safe to listen to them. Mm-hmm. That's it. And I said, because I was asking her, what are some things that we could do to intervene? Yeah. And I think it's just being able to have someone safe to talk to that they feel.
Christina?
Right. I agree completely with Jenny. And then, you know, something to get back to what NAMI, you know, could offer. We do have that program that we teach in the schools with the kids. Something else, even we just have, you know, if the school wanted to call us, we could send them information. Teaching kids about 211, which is Lifeline, you know, that they can call, about the suicide prevention hotline. Just being able to let kids know that those resources are out there, that, you know, we're not, you know, if the counselor say is, you know, they're not there all the time, but there's other resources and places they can reach out to.
How can they reach out to you?
So if they wanted to call NAMI Rochester, they could call 585-423-1593 or visit our website, which is namirock.org.
N-A-M-I. There you go. Yep. N-A-M-I-R-O-C.org. And they'll find the contact information, programs you do.
Correct.
We have seen such great success with this. So, and I know a lot of educators are listening because you're
spring
off school
break,
for the
that's
week.
Right.
So there you go. I want to mention before we go here, NPR reported a couple of years ago, from 1999 to 2014, the suicide rate rose by a quarter in this country. And the group that had the biggest rise, it's not a huge percentage, it's not a huge number of total suicides, but it's the biggest percentage, is girls aged 10 to 14.
That's right.
And there are a lot of conversations about why that is. Bullying is in there, earlier puberty is a possibility. There's a lot of different things. But parents, it's hard. And let's love each other, let's continue to talk, let's make sure we are asking how, we're checking in how we're doing. Again, not to blame everyone, but to make sure that we're there for each other. And I just want to thank our guest, Christina Mosgraber from NAMI Rock. Thank you. Always good to see you, Christina. Thank you
so
much.
You too, Evan. Thank you.
And Jenny Argentieri, thank you for sharing your experience, and really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
All right, short break. More Connections next.